Welcome to Crime and Wine. I'm Pamela Fagan Hutchins, your host, and this is the show where I talk with other crime fiction writers about the stories of thrills and suspense that will leave you mystified, sometimes horrified, and always wanting more. Please join me in welcoming today's special guest. Well, hello out there, you guys. This is Pamela Fagan Hutchins. You probably guessed that since you're at Crime and Wine. And today I'm excited to be bringing in a special guest really quickly. Before we do that, I would be remiss if I didn't tell you that this has been the year of releases for me. Three in January with the Detective Delaney Pace series, which I'm super excited about. And keeping it in Wyoming, we have also the newest installment, Skin and Bones, in the Patrick Flint series. So I'd love it if you'd check those out. But I would also love it if you would check out my guest book. So I want you guys to join me in welcoming the man of many names. This is R.G. Belsky. Hi, Dick. How are you?
Hi. Yeah, Dick is the one I normally go by. But yeah, for our purposes here, I'm Dana Perry, author.
If that makes Dana sense. Perry. And okay, so R.G. Belsky, that's the name you've gone by professionally for a very long time in your career as a journalist, right?
Yeah. The basic story is that as a journalist, I'm Dick Belsky. And if you Googled me as Dick Belsky, you'll find all the big stories I've been involved with, you know, Son of Sam and OJ and everything over the years, real life crime. And at some point when I started writing novels, they wanted, the publishers wanted to call me R.G. Belsky. So I've used R.G. Belsky in most of my books. But with these current books, the publisher wanted to create a different identity because it's a different kind of book than I had done in the past. So they came up with the name Dana Perry. I do my best to try and remember who I am at any point, but it gets a little confusing.
Well, you know, I guess for the readers, if they can just remember to find you under any of those names, Amazon throws breadcrumbs and leads them all back to each other. So they can find.
If you found the wrong book by the wrong author, it'd still be by me. So I'm sure it would be wonderful, you know. So.
Exactly. So we're here to talk about the Dana Perry books, series, the Nikki Cassidy series. But before we dive into that, by the way, hello, Janilyn, who just yelled hello to us out there from the internet world. You guys that are catching this via live stream, feel free to throw your comments in. We'll answer your questions as they come up. And if you're catching the replay or you're catching a podcast only version, then that's okay too. We're going to entertain you. And Janilyn wants you to know that this is her new favorite series.
I immediately love Janilyn right now. I'm very, very happy. Thank you.
I have to throw in because I know that her name, I guess, as a reviewer is Books Read by Prairie Girl. So if you've seen any of the reviews by Books Read by Prairie Girl.
I have. Yes, I am actually familiar with that. So good to actually see the person who is Prairie Girl. Yeah, all right.
Exactly. Okay, so prior to tackling the Nikki Cassidy series, you'd written other series in the past. I think you've got one with a New York City.
I have two series currently out. One is involves what is called the Claire Carlson series, and Claire Carlson is a New York City TV journalist. I live in New York City, and I've been a journalist, and I've worked in TV. So you can see I didn't vary too much from my knowledge to do that. But you know, I love writing, you know, the stuff in New York media. The sixth book in that series called Broadcast Blues came out in January. And now this past month was the last Tuesday, actually. So it's just a week ago, which is why I'm surprised that some people have actually read all three books so far. But all three books in this new series were released simultaneously on April 2nd. And it's Nikki Cassidy. And Nikki Cassidy is a FBI agent based in Washington, who specializes in finding, you know, missing young girls and chasing after serial killers. And it's a little different because this isn't, you know, I've never been an FBI agent. So I had to stretch myself a little bit more to create Nikki Cassidy.
So you guys, by the way, Sherry Steuben also is saying that she loved your series.
Wow, and good.
And chatting some about your pen name, which we can talk about more, the ways in which the, your old and your new writing differs from each other in a moment.
Right.
But we were chatting offline beforehand, guys, and we write some of the work that we're doing now for the same publisher. And we discovered that not only is it for the same publisher, but we write for the same editor, which is kind of a big deal. It's like we're married to the same person.
Yes. You know?
So Helen Jenner is involved with a long-term relationship with both of us. But I wonder if your experience was anything like mine, where they talked you into writing an FBI agent. And did you originally think, I'm real happy writing journalists and people in the news world. I think I'd write great mysteries that way. Or did you go in thinking, I want to go FBI?
No, I your first version is exactly the way it happened. Bookature is very, and I mean this in a positive sense, they are much more proactive than, and I've worked for a number of publishers and written books. And normally, yes, I come up with a book and they like it or whatever, and they publish it. And it's pretty much generated by me. That's certainly the case with the Claire Carlson series. With Bookature, they have an idea of what they think will be a good book for them and for their readers, and they make suggestions. And, you know, being a journalist who's been listening to editors all my life, I'm kind of used to that. I don't take it as a bad thing. I take it as a good thing. And it would be Helen in this case, our common editor, Helen Jenner. And she said, you know, you've written all these books that are about the media. You've written all these books that are set in New York City. Like, what if you did something completely different? And so we came up with this idea of the female FBI agent. And I do still get a little journalism in there. Like in one of the Nikki books, as the people who've read it do, I have a fairly prominent character who's a somewhat unscrupulous journalist, which is fun to write since I was a journalist. Not that I was unscrupulous in any way. So yeah, you get a lot of guidance, but I mean that, like I say, in the best sense. They're very and even in like the characters, even in like something as minor as names, you know, they'll give you suggestions. Like, so if Nikki is involved in a romance with somebody, and I've named the guy, you know, Joe Smith, because I don't really have a great imagination for names, they'll come up with like, well, wouldn't it be cooler if his name was Brett somebody, or you know, some kind of a unique name. So for me, it works very well. I've really liked, you know, all the ideas that they've given me, and hopefully I've been able to take them and run with them and then give them something back that they like. So far that teamwork has worked well.
We're kind of living the same life. Just want you to know. We'll have to talk about that later when we're offline, but this familiar story is telling me, I guess, that the positive takeaway here is not only that you're having a good experience, but also that they were so positive about you and your body of work and you as a writer that they wanted you in the fold no matter what it is they could convince you to write. So,
well, so the biggest problem I had with the Nikki Cassidy books is I've never written anything that I'm not familiar with the locale, the site. So, you know, I've written most of my books in New York. And so the FBI agent had to be based in Washington, and I've been in Washington like twice in my life. So, you know, I really didn't want to go down there and do, and I didn't think I could write Washington very well. So the whole premise of the Nikki Cassidy books is she goes back to her hometown, a small town in southeastern Ohio. Now, amazingly enough, I'm from Ohio, and I went to college in a small town in southeastern Ohio. So I was able to use my own, you know, personal knowledge to do this. And all the books involve reasons why she goes back to this little town where people keep getting, young girls keep getting kidnapped and serial killers are, you know, and it is a little bit like Jessica Fletcher in Cabot Cove. You know, it's a small town with an incredible amount of crime. You know, Cabot Cove had like 2,000 people and 500 of them were murder victims. You know, it isn't quite like that, but I'm able to write in a comfort zone of an area that I know and that I feel I can portray in an accurate way.
So have you enjoyed what you have needed to learn to write an FBI agent? Has it been something that is a great experience, or are you thinking, I really miss my journalists, my
I mean, I'm actually fine with both of them. I don't think I would ever write anything that I wasn't comfortable and enjoy writing. I mean, a couple times, I don't know if this ever happened to you, a couple times I've started something or tried something and then I'm like, okay, that doesn't really work. No, it's, you know, and again, this isn't like a police procedural. I mean, if I was writing a book where this was like, how should we analyze an FBI case? I mean, Nikki is a character, the kind of characters I like in a book. You know, I always say, to me, I draw my inspiration from characters from like TV shows I love, like The Rockford Files or Columbo. It's not really, I mean, you want the story, you want the twist, but it's mainly the character that if you like Nikki Cassidy or you find her interesting, that you're going to read it. And all the other stuff is kind of a bonus. That's how I read books. And I just like to think there's a lot of people out there who feel the same way. Cause you can write the best story in the history of the world. If the reader doesn't relate to the character, it's not going to work.
I totally agree. And we have a question from Sherry Steuben. She's wanting to know if Nikki's going to continue, if there will be a fourth book or.
I sure hope so. You know, again, these three just came out and I'm a little exhausted from writing three books so I may have to take a short nap before I do anything more. But so one of the things about the Nikki books are, and the people who've read all three, sounds like there's a few people here, will know this. They are connected and there are sort of cliffhangers in them, but I don't want people to think that the crime isn't solved. So in each of the Nikki books, the big story that she's chasing, the serial killer, the missing girls, whatever, that all comes to a conclusion in each book. So it's wrapped up. I don't like, you know, say, hey, more next book or something like that.
Right.
You finish the crime. But there's an overarching story which involves the murder years earlier of Nikki's little sister that she keeps running into new questions about, and she's determined to find the answers. And that arc continues over all three books. And I would say the biggest comparison I would make to a show that most people are probably familiar with is, and I thought about this when I was doing it, was the TV show Monk. And, you know, in that, Monk would solve the crime each week, but there was all of this effort that he wanted to find out who murdered his wife. And that went on through the whole series.
Right.
So based on that, I definitely like am planning on writing more books, hope to write more books because, you know, it's fun to not only, you know, have Nikki doing her stuff today, but also doing this more overreaching arc, which, you know, how long that goes on for, I haven't really figured that out yet. But
Nikki will tell you when you get there.
Yeah. That's the other thing people should know, because people are going to ask, you always ask this question. I plan nothing out. You know, I write the books with no idea where I'm going or what I'm doing. And just for people know who read the Nikki Cassidy books, I think in all three, or at least most of the three, the bad guy or the killer at the end was as much of a surprise to me as it was to the reader, hopefully, because, you know, I'm kind of like, okay, well, who did this? And I know a lot of authors do that, and I'm one of them. I like to surprise myself, and then hopefully it surprises the reader too.
I've done it both ways, and I think they're all equally painful by the time I get to the end. But the last one I wrote with Helen, I did not have any idea until I had to make a decision at the end who did it, and it was really fun.
What I always find, and I've done this both with the most recent Claire Carlson book and with these Nikki Cassidy books that are out now, is, you know, I sort of am torn between, geez, should I go that extra step? Should I go too far? Is that, you know, is that too much? Am I pushing it? Or should I just play it safe and make it be, you know, the logical thing? And I find that every time I push it and don't play it safe, it seems very popular. People like, you know, I there's an ending on the third Nikki Cassidy book, which I'm not going to obviously give away. But when I was doing it, I was like, I don't know, this is so shocking, or this is so much, I just don't know if it'll work. And I said, well, you know, I'm just going to leave it and see what they say. And of course, you know, the first thing I get back from like Helen and other people who read it is, oh my God, I loved your ending. I love that ending. So that's kind of, you know, how I operate. And, you know, if I need to change it, I mean, you know, there could be an occasion where, you know, somebody says, you know, that doesn't really work. Wouldn't it be better if this person, you know, did it? But yeah, that's kind of the way I write. And it's, you know, it's worked for me. I've interviewed a lot of authors. I've talked to other authors, you know, who do like 200 page outlines of the book before they start. So it really depends.
Yeah, I can't do that. Well, let me ask you this, because in journalism, right, it's not about how fantastical the ending that you can write is. It's about whether or not it's correct, you know, whether it is actually news. Have you enjoyed the freedom?
Oh, I love it. I love it. Yeah, I love it. And, you know, one of the things is I've written I've written more books, but I've had 24 books published. You know, people don't understand, like, if you had 24 books published, you've probably written, you know, many, many more that, you know, are in pieces, or they wind up as part of a book or whatever. But I've had 24 books published, and I worked in journalism full time until I was a few years ago. I was a managing editor at NBCnews.com, and I got a big contract to write a different series. And I decided it was a good time to try, you know, and just be a full time writer. And since then, I've done like a large number of books. I mean, like 15 or something, or like over the past, you know, several years. Bottom line is, people come to me and they say, oh, well, this is really nice. Like, you retired from journalism and now you're writing books. And I'm like, no, I didn't start writing books when I retired. I was writing them the whole time. I mean, I published like 7 books while I was a full-time journalist. And people would say to me, like, well, how can you work all day in a newsroom and then want to write more? Because it's completely different. And what you said, you know, Pamela, is exactly right. In a newsroom, it's all about the facts. I spent most of my, because nothing works if you don't have the facts right. So you spend all your time making sure of that above everything else. When I'm writing fiction, I just get to make stuff up. So that is so much fun and so much release. And, you know, and they work, strangely enough, they work together, the two careers. And, but they're not the same. They're completely different.
My previous past career to being an author was I was a private investigator / investigator in the legal field. I'm a lawyer, and right. And I would write these, you know, huge, long 60, 70 page reports, and it was so dry and factual, but I felt like it was the best introduction to that I could had, you know, being investigative and then writing it out and having to be factual led me to a place where being able to be creative with it and being able to follow a story and follow these different witnesses, it's just great practice. Janilyn wants you to know, she wants you to push those fantastical endings.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm going to keep doing it until somebody tells me to stop. But the two advantages that that journalism, well, two of the big advantages that journalism gave me is, number one, it taught me how to meet deadlines, because I spent my whole life meeting deadlines. Mm-hmm. So when a publisher now, and you know, you have writers be like, take years to write a book, or I've got to get my creativity. And that isn't me. They'll say, I need a book by, can you give me a book by next July? And I'll be sure, whatever. I can meet the deadline. The other thing is, it helps me to do, and I normally, this is mostly a positive thing, is, you know, when people say, oh, that's an easy read or a quick read. And I mean that in a positive way. You know, it's a fast read. Well, you just, pages fly by. Well, you know, a lot of people feel that with my books, because I'm writing them from a journalistic background. I mean, I wasn't just a journalist. I was a tabloid journalist at the New York Post and New York Daily. I mean, our job is to get it out there and get it out quick. So, you know, in my books, I don't spend a lot. I don't spend 3 pages describing the sunset or something. You know, I do dialogue, action. It's all very quick. And I think, you know, I think that's one thing that a lot of people have said is, wow, you know, your book is so easy to read. And I know when I read books, I don't like to get involved in a book that gets too, that requires too much work for me. You know, I like to be able to just turn the pages quickly.
I love it. And I think that for what you and I write and the fact that people are reading it for thrills and for escapism, I mean, how thrilled do you feel if you're digging through a really dense paragraph that goes on for three pages, you know, that it just, it's like a boat sagging in the water when the motor cuts off. Right.
Well, you know, I mean, maybe other people do this the same way and, you know, and you too, but you know, when I'm writing a book, my audience is basically me. I don't do things. I don't have like beta readers. I don't show it to 10 people and get their opinions. I write a book with the idea, like, if I could write a book that I would want to read, there's got to be a lot of people out there like me who are going to want to read the book. And that's kind of how I approach it. I'm writing books like I write, you know, because all my, you know, I have all the favorites, which are none of them terribly unusual, the Michael Conleys and the Raymond Chandlers and the Robert Parkers and the Sue Graftons and all these. And those are my inspiration. And so I'm just trying to write my own version of books and characters like that. And so far it's, you know, it's worked out pretty well. I mean, at least most people seem to like it anyway, you know.
Well, it sounds like they do from the people talking to us today. Hey, I did want to go really quick through with you a few of our speed round questions, mainly because beforehand you answered one of them for me before we got on the show, and I loved your answer, which is a question I often ask other authors, which is, if you couldn't be an author, what would you want to be for a day? And your answer, I loved.
Well, yeah, just a little pulling up back the curtain. She sent me the questions, and a lot of them I was like, oh God, I don't know. Like, I don't know how I would answer that one. But and I thought about that, and I really tried to think about what other jobs. But I basically have had two jobs my life. I've been a journalist, and I have been an author, a fiction author. And those are really the only two things I think I know how to do. I don't think I had a few odd jobs when I started out, and I got fired from them all. You know, like I work in a super, you know, like your summer job. I couldn't do anything. I just thought, oh, nobody's ever going to hire me. But I can do journalism, and I could write novels. And, you know, if those two things fall apart, God help me, because, you know, I have nothing else that I'm really capable of doing. But listen, a lot of people have trouble finding one job that they like and are pretty good at. And I've been able to find two. So, you know,
I think that's I'm satisfied. You, when you think of how many people would say, I've worked my whole life doing things that put food on the table, that kept the lights on, that kept my family warm, but I didn't like any of them. And instead to say, I've done two things in my life and I loved both of them, and I don't think I'd want to or could do anything else, I'd say you've had it pretty good from a professional development standpoint. I love it. So one or two more questions for you before we wrap it up. Some of the super easy ones. Do you have a particular place that you go to that is your writing space?
I'm very unusual with that. I cannot, this is, you're in, I live in, this is my New York apartment. So this is my office in New York, but I hardly ever write in here. I mean, I work in here, but I don't write. I'm one of these people, I need to write among noise and confusion. And I guess a lot of this has coming from a newsroom. So I pretty much always leave the house and go somewhere to write. My favorites are basically coffee shops. I just go to a coffee shop and sit there for a couple hours and I write everything out. I actually write it on a longhand, you know, just because I feel more creative that way. And then I come back and do stuff. But I've written everywhere. I've written, you know, on the beach. I've written, you know, in restaurants. I've written in parks. I've written on the subway, you know. And that's what kind of inspires me. Sitting in a room by myself, it doesn't work for me. And I know, again, I'm pretty unusual in that. But I just love the interaction. I love hearing people screaming and yelling and, you know, wondering where their coffee is around me. That it just works for me.
You're very New York.
Yeah, and I'm not originally from New York, but I'm like I'm used to it. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Okay, and so if you were going to go out to happy hour with Nikki Cassidy, what would the two of you guys be ordering?
I always have trouble, you know, I'm not sure I'm even consistent with that with Nikki in the books, because I always have trouble, you know, like sometimes I'll, you know, it'd be like a vodka or something. I'll have her, you know, I think I use vodka a lot because I've known a lot of people that, you know, that drank it. With me in real life, I've just always been a Bacardi rum and coke guy. That's you know, like I used to drink like scotch, and you know, sometimes I'll have a beer. I am a total non-wine person. You know, I go places and go, oh, this is great wine. I'm like, oh yeah, I just don't, you know, I don't like it. You know, I've written a few books in the past, including one series as Dana Perry, involving a police officer called Abby Pierce. It was done before the Nikki Cassidy series, who was an alcoholic. And, you know, so in those books, I have to spend a lot more time on what they drink. And, you know, I have to do a little research on that. But it's not a big part of my books, the drinking. The food probably is a little more because it's, you know, it's fun to have somebody eating something that sounds, you know, like a guilty pleasure, like a giant hot dog or a pizza or something like that.
But so I'll throw a few of those things. Right this second, that made my stomach growl. So just.
Yeah. But I do think, you know, like people always say, would you like to hang, you know, what about your character? Would you like your be if your character was real? And yeah, I mean, Nikki Cassidy, even though she's not a journalist, is based, like all my characters, on all these incredible, talented, fascinating women that I have worked with over the years, very smart people. And, you know, and I mean, if I had a chance to hang out with Nikki Cassidy in real life, she's the kind of person I would like to. I probably have hung out with Nikki Cassidy type people in the past. And that's why she's created. I mean, you know, she's not created out of thin air. She's created out of qualities of people that I have liked and admired.
I love that you find these women protagonists. And we have a lot of women commenting. Charlene Zoll-Capadie says, hi. And we've also got a question. Will there be any more Abby Pierce books? Because there are people that love those series too.
Well, we need to send all these queries to Helen at Bookature so they can sign me up to do these. You know, yeah, I mean, at the moment, no, the Abby Pierce series was completed, and this is the Nikki Cassidy series. I liked Abby Pierce. She basically was a small town police officer. Well, she had come from New York, but she was a small town police officer on Martha's Vineyard, where I vacationed a lot. And it was really fun because I got to go up on vacation and do research. I got to go to the beach and then have scenes at the beach that you could write about. So I liked Abby, but it would be nice to see her again too. Yeah.
Do you think she might ever pop up in a Nikki book?
You know, I've never done that. I know there's some authors that do that. I mean, Michael Connelly is one, and I love Michael Connelly, but I find it sometimes a little annoying where he merges characters from, it kind of stops my belief. I don't know why. There's something, it's like, so, oh, wait, I'm just reading a novel. No, I'm not reading a real person. So when he puts, you know, Harry Bosch, you know, with the Lincoln lawyer or some of the other characters. So I've never done that. A lot of people have said to me, you know, well, you could get Claire and Nikki doing something together. And I've never really thought of that. I did have a character before called Gil Malloy, who was a kind of male version of these characters, very driven, very interesting, but, you know, flawed too. And a lot of people said, well, you should have Gil Malloy, you know, fix Gil Malloy, have a romance between him and Claire or Nikki. And I was thought about it, and I was like, oh my God, they'd probably kill each other. You know what I mean? They're both so like volatile. Most of the men that are with like Nikki, and I've had a few men with her, because she starts off in the very first book as very happily engaged to like what seems like the most perfect man in the world. And obviously I need to blow that up immediately because nobody wants that, you know? And so she screws that up and dumps him, and then gets involved in some other tangled romance relationships. Most of the people she's with are a lot saner than she, I mean, not saner is probably the word. They're a lot more straightforward than she is. So I think if she was with somebody, you know, I'm not even sure she and Claire would get along, or Abby Pierce would get along. They they'd probably be too competitive with each other.
I love it. I love it. Well, I appreciate so much your great chat with us today and being on the show. I love hearing that we are living parallel lives and can't wait to see how Nikki does for you. So I'm going to be watching this with a lot of interest, Dick.
Thank you, Pamela. And I love, from what I've seen on the bottom of your screen here, that a number of people have not, similarly, not just read The Nowhere Girls, but have read all three books, the hope is, of course, that once you read The Nowhere Girls, you can't stop. You got to keep reading, you know.
Exactly. Guilty pleasure binge all the way through. We believe in that.
I guess what this means is I better start writing a fourth book very quickly, you know.
Yes, you should. And and so when you do, give me a shout again. We'll see if we can't chat. And my very best to you. Thanks for coming on the show.
Okay.
All right. So you guys know what happens now. This is the super exciting part of the show where I tell you, hey, if you want to watch the past shows, and there are some awesome ones, let me tell you, just go out to my website, PamelaFaganHutchins.com. You can see past shows. You can see upcoming shows and maybe even read the books ahead of time like you guys did for Dana Perry / R.G. Belsky / Dick Belsky with his books. And you can also find my books out there, ebook, paperback, hardcover, large print, audiobook. Get your library or bookstore to order them if you would prefer to take it that route. This has been a solely owned and copyrighted production of Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, a digital media group with over 4 million viewers and listeners in 153-plus countries. Hope to know that you guys are going out there and picking up some good books this week, and I will see you next time. If I can figure out how to turn off all the banners, can she do it, folks, and do the outro? Hold it, wait for it, wait for it.
Thanks for joining us today on Crime and Wine, chats with crime fiction authors and Pamela Fagan Hutchins. We hope you enjoyed this episode and will check back in with us next time for more thrills, suspense, and stories that will mystify, sometimes horrify, and always leave you wanting more.